5:30, we'll call to order the June 5th edition of the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission. Roll call, please.
Souther?
Present.
Donaldson?
Present.
Miller?
Present.
Wendt?
Present.
Hill? Smith?
Here.
Struthers, absent.
You have before you an agenda for this evening. Are there any changes to this? Changes or additions? Seeing none, we will approve the agenda as presented. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes. Provided with the minutes from the last meeting. Assuming that you've had a chance to look those over, are there any additions or corrections to the minutes from the previous meeting? There are no further corrections. The minutes stand approved as read, as presented. This is the time in the meeting where there's time for public comment. This is the time for members of the public to comment on matters that are not scheduled, that are not on the agenda. Is there anyone here who would like to come to the podium and speak about something that's not on the agenda? I'm kind of guessing there isn't. All right, we're going to move on to item 6, quarterly training session, the floodplain training.
And do that after we get done with the public meeting, so that's fine. It's just mostly for the commission.
At down to item after item 8. Okay. So item 7 is tabled business. Did you want to read the memorandum regarding tabled items?
I can just summarize. What's before you are two items that were tabled at past Planning and Zoning Commission meetings. At the last commission meeting, staff asked that the commission consider directing staff to contact the applicants and ask them to give them a deadline to submit revisions by so that we can move it forward. We did that. It went under the chair's signature. It's for specifically two cases. And I think what I'll do is go in order. What you would need to do on each specific case is to remove it from the table, a vote to remove it from the table, and then there can be a brief discussion and then direction from there. Any questions on the process?
Do you have to have a motion to withdraw, or can I just ask for...
Yeah, you will need a motion when you get to 7.2 and 7.3 to specifically withdraw it from the table or remove it from the table, and there'll be a vote on that, and then I'll talk about the blacks going case by case.
Item 7.2, the CUP 06-14 Black Conditional Use Permit for the Campground Trail Trailer Park. The application was withdrawn by the applicant, Noreen Black. So I will ask for a motion to withdraw this from our agenda.
I'll make a motion to withdraw from our agenda.
Remove it from the table first.
Remove it from the table first.
Sorry.
Roll call on that then. Roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Bent?
Aye.
Hunter?
Yes.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Okay, now that it's been removed from the table, just as you all just have heard, it has been withdrawn from the applicant. This specific one is just procedural. You had placed on the table, had to be removed, and then I can then tell you it was withdrawn by the applicant. And that case will not go forward. Nope.
Okay.
Hope you just need to take it off the table for discussion.
7.3, SUB 09-13, the Natty Subdivision. We're ready for
I move that we remove that from the table.
Second.
A roll call vote, please. Steele?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Calder?
Yes.
Wendt?
Yes.
Sellers?
Yes.
Okay, as the commission will recall, back in November of 2013, this was a proposed major subdivision preliminary plat. Sorry, I'm making this beep over here. That is northeast of the city limits of Nevada along S-14. It's a subdivision, one parcel into seven lots, and there are four outlots. It's zoned AR, agricultural residential. There are, this is being processed according to the older regulations. If you'll recall, last May, we adopted a new code of ordinances. This had started the process, application process, prior to those going into effect. So it is grandfathered, in essence, through the old regulations. There were a number of concerns that staff noted, and the commission agreed with those concerns and hence put on the table and remanded it back to the applicant for additional information. The applicant was given a deadline and stopped in our office the day after that deadline, and I just simply told him he had missed the deadline and he needed to come to you all if he did have additional information. So your options today are to hear from the applicant, decide if there's enough additional information that you do on the full-fledged review tonight or a subsequent meeting, or if you feel that it's not adequate enough time to review the additional information and you do want to see it go forward, you could recommend denial to the Board of Supervisors, or you could be satisfied with the information presented and recommend approval to the Board of Supervisors. Yes.
The additional information, I didn't see it in the packet. So what we would be hearing would be cold. Okay, so we would have to make a decision based upon not having an opportunity to review it in this formal manner. So, Mike?
If there is additional information.
And I didn't hear it the first time in November. Right. I'm newer than that. So I started in January. So I'd need to either abstain or I'd want to actually hear and have a discussion about the information.
I think you need to abstain.
Okay. You have a quorum. Okay, yeah. So if it's something that's, I guess we need to, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it sounds like we want probably not to act on it.
Yeah. That is one of the options to table it till next month's meeting again.
And I read through all the information that was in the packet, and it's very information dense, and I think I'd kind of like to hear not just necessarily the new information, but to be maybe just represent.
Start from scratch.
But I think all the information, whatever information is still going to be present in that packet.
But additional.
But maybe just rehearing a summary of a presentation, at least, not just here's what the new information is layered on top of information that I didn't hear. Just
absolutely, we'd have to walk through it again. It is very complicated. Of course, indeed, you have new information.
Well, we haven't voted whether to allow it. I make a motion to table it till next month.
You understand if we if you present the information and the staff is able to review it and apply it to all of our regulations so that we can all, as a board, understand it better, how it applies and doesn't apply, that works in everybody's best interest.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though it's time-consuming and kind of unfortunate to have to make another meeting, it...
Actually, I...
I did meet with Sean on the city of Nevada, and he has my preliminary information also, and so we were going to move forward with Nevada for a July meeting. So it would, I guess if it works with the board here, and just tabling it until July, and I can hand out this new information to Leanna or give it all to you tonight, and then I could come back in July and just make the full presentation from the beginning, and we can kind of go over everything. I can go over what the stuff that I've made changed from the November meeting, if you guys would like to see that tonight.
If we tabled this until the next meeting, we would, in essence, be granting an extension to the deadline that we post. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I think it's just fair to say, ask the question, is a deadline, and are we going to do that for in the future? It's a brand new policy that we said at our last meeting that we were going to ask people with somewhat stale applications to act or withdraw. And so we are, in essence, from the very first meeting since setting that policy, making an extension to the deadline we said we would set.
So can we make a motion to withdraw the application?
No, only the applicant can withdraw the application.
If he presented next month, I was wondering if it affected the new regulations. Is it like a new application, or it's just, like you said, an extension?
As Aaron said, it would be an extension of the deadline that you put in place at your last month's meeting. As long as the application is in the process, and we have some that date back to 2001 or 2, it is considered under the regulations in effect the day it was submitted, or when it started the process. So, unless he withdraws it, it won't go through the new regulations.
What about the new information that he has for us? Which regulations will that go under?
It stays with the case as submitted. So it's going to be with what? I don't have them written down. I would love to, but...
Which meeting did this first come up?
November... It was November 4th, 2013.
But isn't there additional documentation in there going back to 2010 for an original application?
Yeah, I think the conceptual review started. This has been in the process for a while. I don't recall when this first came through conceptual review, but it was prior to May 2013. I can tell you that because... I know that because that's when the new regulations went into effect.
I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but on one hand, I feel squeamish about extending a deadline that we just set on a policy we just set. On the other hand, the goal was to spur the applicant into taking some action, and we've done that. I mean, that has worked, so...
I agree with that. I think that the whole point of the deadline is to keep applications from going stale and then just stagnating indefinitely. The idea was to either some activity is going to happen, you know, by that date, or we, I guess, dismiss it or whatever. We evaluate our options at that point. But so maybe the deadline was missed, but I think since this is a kind of a new policy, and since it essentially accomplished the spirit of the law, you know, I think that...
They have to comply. What was the date on your memorandum?
Had about 10 days.
And it went out by mail?
No, email.
I think I got an email on about the 8th. And the deadline, I believe, that was the 12th, and I came into the county office that next day with paperwork. Sorry.
If we decide not to extend the deadline, that doesn't
take it off the off the agenda. Is that correct?
No, you've removed it from the table. No, you
run by the applicant.
Right. We would ask you to make some sort of action to recommend some form of action to the Board of Supervisors. It can't just stay on the agenda. You would need to take some, whether it's approval of conditions or denial.
Okay. So if we think there's enough information to approve,
it would have to be right. Yeah,
recommend denial.
Okay. I'm not ready to do that. Recommend denial. It's a valid plan if we just had all the information, I think. So I think we're
deciding whether it's a valid plan or not. I think we need to hear what exactly is the proposal with all of the supporting information and documentation.
In writing.
Following the standard process.
Tonight or?
I'm not suggesting tonight.
No.
How long does your staff need to adequately review and modify a staff report based on the new information that he may or may not yet submit?
2 weeks. Our deadlines are always the 13th of each month, so it's generally 2 weeks until we publish the agenda.
Deadline you would recommend for submitting the new information in writing to modify the application and the staff report?
4:30 p.m. June 13th.
Is that what you would
recommend we do? You can't make that recommendation? I guess it's definitely a strong alternative for the commission to consider. And I made it clear to Orson when he came in, I was not going to share anything else with you all before tonight's meeting because he had missed the deadline. And I'm one that I think we need to have deadlines for a reason. But ultimately, that decision rests with you. And as Kristen said, we don't do recommendations, so.
Yeah, but we get a great staff report. And we don't have a staff report in front of us with the additional information.
Okay.
Did I already make a motion to table it?
No, I don't think so.
I make a motion that we table this agenda item.
Wait. I just want to make a point of order. If you make a motion to table, that's not debatable. So make sure your discussion is right. I'm looking at Aaron, isn't that correct? Motion table is not debatable. Come on.
Table. We have to table it. We can't just take it off the.
But with revised information. So I would make a motion that we extend the deadline to submit any additional information to June 13th at 4:30 p.m. and that we table this item for July's meetings for kind of a re-presentation of what the currently proposed revised plan would be.
Includes the original.
The original information plus the revised information.
Second that.
Okay, now I have another question. That means that the staff report will include all of that information. Okay.
So I have a motion on the table to extend the deadline to, what was it, June 13th or 14th?
June 13th.
And table
the application to include the new information at the next meeting. Does that sum it up?
Or does it go back on the agenda as old business?
It's tabled. Okay. I'll have to remove it from the table again. I think that's the more clean way to do it.
Yeah. Yep.
In essence, we are in the same condition a month from now and we will consider at that time whether we have new information or not.
Adequate information, yeah.
So essentially the idea is that it will be re-presented next month in its entirety, so including old information plus the revisions, and then we can either act on it and move forward with it at that point.
Roll call, please.
Miller?
Yes.
Horn?
Yes.
Hauser?
Yes.
Donaldson?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Steele?
Motion carries. Thank you for your patience with us. It's a complicated process, and you can see that we struggle with it too.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Thank you for your time.
We will send out surrounding property owner notifications again, and we'll probably expect the applicant to pay for this round of surrounding property owners.
Okay.
For mailing, we've done.
Okay.
Our fees normally cover just two. So
okay. All right.
Kristen will work with you to get an invoice.
Okay. Thank you.
July 7th.
Okay, we're moving on to old business.
Can I say something first? I would like to thank all of you for coming and apologize to you. This is not your fault by any means. It's just something that kind of happened, and we would be more than glad to hear from you if you come again. So.
Now we're going to do quarterly training session, floodplain training.
Oh, do you want to do it now? Okay, give me a minute. I have some things to hand out.
What I am going to do, you're not going to pick me up, because it's going to be a very rarely do you guys encounter it. One, if the regulations are not under your jurisdiction, you can pass it on. So, take one but it does fall under your jurisdiction, so now you can have a great example if there's floodplain as part of subdivision. But you normally get a statement from the floodplain administrator who happens to me that there's floodplain on property, they need to define it, whatever. So I just want to give you some basic 101 on flooding, question management means. I'm going to pass around our first thought, a flyer from the Flooding in Iowa video series that Jensen put together. A very well done series. I think there are 16 or so videos. I've got a couple I want to show you. And then we're going to do an activity using a very cool model.
Oh, that's what that is.
And I'll talk to you about this. We're borrowing this from the Iowa Floodplain Former Administration Association. It costs about $2,000.
Hopefully this will work. These videos were meant to be for elected officials and appointed officials, not the day-to-day and floodplain managers that actually need to know more detail than what these videos show. They were done by Iowa State Extension under contract with the DNR. And let's hope we get this to work. I'm going to show you the first one that just gives you a history of the National Flood Insurance Program. The National Flood Insurance Program is the entity that's in charge of a three-pronged approach to floodplain management in the United States. And I'll take that up in a minute.
At Iowa State University Extension and Outreach is a series of web-based videos
designed to educate local officials and the general public about floodplains, flood work, and basic floodplain management. Introduction to the National Flood Insurance Program, understanding flooding, floodplain mapping, floodplain regulations, and flood insurance. The topics are addressed in technical terminology if possible. Viewers do not need any background in engineering, hydrology, land use regulation, or insurance to gain a better understanding of how floods occur, the risks of flooding, and the tools available to mitigate future flooding. The link just below this introductory video will take you to the first educational video of the series. From there, you can use the bottom bar to navigate to other videos in the series. You can also click on a category tab on the top of the webpage, which will take you to a screen with links to just the videos in that category. Each video includes two corresponding items, participant materials and a short...
So the first video, you don't need to bother with because that tells you how to use the video. Each video has a participant manual, and so that's why I handed out. There's, we have one for video, I think, one or two. That gives you the terminology. There's also a test your knowledge quiz at the end. You don't have to report your scores to anyone.
You will learn about the following topics related to the National Flood Insurance Program. The history of natural disasters that led to early flood control efforts in the United States and the most significant flood control program in the country today, the National Flood Insurance Program, or NFIP, and the goals and objectives of the NFIP. These key terms and acronyms will be used during this presentation. You can find the terms and their definitions in the definitions section of your participant materials. In 1927, after months of heavy rain in the northern and central plains, the Mississippi River left its banks and flooded approximately 27,000 square miles. It was an epic disaster. 10 states, including Iowa, were inundated with water up to 30 feet deep in many locations. 14% of the land area of Arkansas was underwater, and the river expanded to a width of 60 miles below Memphis, Tennessee. The flood caused more than $400 million in damages and killed 246 people in 7 states. Up to that time, government had little involvement in flood control. After the Great Mississippi River flood, however, Congress passed the Flood Control Act of 1928. The act charged the Army Corps of Engineers with keeping the waters of the Great Rivers away from the people by undertaking massive flood control projects, such as levees, dams, channeling, and diversion floodways. During the next 40 years, Congress passed numerous flood control acts, often in response to flood disasters that occurred somewhere in the United States. The emphasis remained on large-scale structural projects designed to gain control of the nation's rivers. By the late 1960s, however, Congress became concerned with the increasing costs of flood relief and the general failure of structural flood control projects to reduce flood losses. A major reason for this failure was continued development of homes and businesses in floodplains. With the realization that flood protection programs should not only include structural measures, but also promote the use of policy tools to reduce development in the floodplain, in 1968, Congress ushered in the most significant flood program in the country today. That program is the National Flood Insurance Program. The passage of the National Flood Insurance Act in 1968 marked a significant shift toward a comprehensive approach to reducing flood losses. The Act created the National Flood Insurance Program, or NFIP, which was designed to achieve four goals. To emphasize less costly non-structural flood control measures over structural measures such as dams and levees, to reduce federal disaster costs by shifting the burden from all taxpayers to floodplain occupants, to provide landowners with affordable flood insurance coverage not generally available in the private market, and to encourage communities to take an active role in floodplain management to reduce future flood-related losses. This primarily is accomplished through locally adopted regulations that are designed to reduce the likelihood of flood damage to buildings constructed according to the regulations, prevent new developments from increasing the potential for flood damage to existing properties, and ensure that the natural beneficial functions of floodplains are maintained or restored. The NFIP is based on a mutual agreement among local, state, and federal governments. If a community adopts and enforces regulations that meet minimum federal and state standards for development in its floodplain areas, then federally guaranteed flood insurance is made available to property owners in that community. Thus, there are three interconnected components that are key to the success of the NFIP: accurate floodplain mapping, effective enforcement of floodplain regulations, and federally backed flood insurance. Accurate mapping is the driving force behind sound floodplain management. The maps provide the foundation for communities to enforce their regulations and for rating insurance. The availability of federally backed flood insurance is based on communities participating in the National Flood Insurance Program. A person can purchase flood insurance for any home or business located anywhere within a community that is participating in the program. Premiums for flood insurance vary largely due to a structure's flood risk. That level of risk is analyzed based on flood maps that are created by FEMA. This video series will address each of these components: mapping, regulation, and insurance, and how they work together in greater detail. Today, you have learned about the history of natural disasters that led to early flood control efforts in the United States, and how these events formed the basis of our modern-day system for flood management, insurance, and mapping, the National Flood Insurance Program.
So that just sets the basis, the background as to the history of the NFIP. Story County first started participating in the National Flood Insurance Program with our first floodplain map in 1986. The way it works, if FEMA provides the local community, and a community is a city or a county, with a floodplain map, we are required to adopt that map. If we don't adopt that map, we become sanctioned. If we become sanctioned, no one within the community, so unincorporated Story County in our particular instance, whether they reside in the floodplain or outside of the floodplain, may purchase flood insurance. It's a great incentive for communities to adopt the floodplain map and the regulations that go hand in hand with that map. I will not get on my soapbox and talk about the quality of the map in Story County. It is extremely inaccurate, and it makes our job extremely difficult. And that has been quite troublesome over the past few years, but we know changes are coming, at least in the very foreseeable future. Let me do any questions on just the basic background on floodplains in Iowa, the United States. I'm trying to drive and talk.
Or city does not adopt the map, then the people residing can or cannot?
Cannot.
Claim.
Cannot. Cannot. If FEMA provides a local jurisdiction, a community with a map, if FEMA comes in and does the studies, the H&H, the hydraulics and hydrology studies, to determine where the map floodplain should be in the community, and the community just either disagrees with the map and thumbs their nose, there's no variety of reasons, that community becomes sanctioned. They are now a participating community in NFIP. Since you're not a participating community, no one can purchase flood insurance. For a number of years, that happened with McCallsburg. McCallsburg, with the 2008 remapping, had not been previously in the floodplain, And 2008 new maps came out. They were added to the with mapped floodplain, and they chose not to adopt an ordinance in the map. The minute were sanctioned, so no one in the community of McCallsburg could purchase flood insurance. That has since changed. They are now a participating community, all as well in McCallsburg. It's a huge misconception that the only people that want flood insurance or are required to purchase flood insurance live in a floodplain. That's not true. Anyone can purchase flood insurance, and we all live in a floodplain. We just assume varying degrees of risk. And if you have a federally backed mortgage and you are in the floodplain, your lender is required by federal law, governed by the FDIC, to require you to purchase flood insurance on that structure. And that is how FDIC insures federally backed mortgages are held safe from the risk property owners take by building in the floodplain.
Trying to update the map.
Right.
Yep. Have any idea how long that might take?
No clue. I thought it was supposed after the 2008 and 2010 flooding. The Iowa Flood Center was created at the University of Iowa. The Iowa Flood Center is able to use tools that were not available. The accuracy is much greater with the topographic contours they have through this. That the floodplain maps that they're developing are very accurate as possibly can be. And the DNR is working with FEMA to get those to be adopted as a regulatory product. So some kinks had to be worked out, but initially we were 2012. I think the last map I saw, the studies are underway in Story County, so I'm looking at 2015, 2016. That keeps on getting pushed back. Just some history from 1986 to 2008. FEMA received 30 odd letters of map change requests, like 33. The letter of map change is a property owner has been told that he or she has floodplain on their property. They spend money, have a detailed analysis done by a surveyor. They submit this letter of map change to FEMA. FEMA agrees with it, disagrees with it. Generally, they agree. If they agree, they send a letter to the local jurisdiction. That letter of map change, in essence, takes that property out of the floodplain. It might be a meets and bounds description. It might be just a house. It's very specifically directed as to what the application asks for. So 30-some, I do think it's 33 from 86 to 2008. We've had about 40 since 2008. And that goes to the level of concern we have with our maps. But we are bound to regulate based on those maps. If we fail to regulate based on that map floodplain, we also can be sanctioned. Okay. So going on to, I think it's 13. What does that sheet say? Did someone tell? Yeah. Let's go there. This is a very short one. This just tells you what we regulate and how broad the definition of development is when it comes to the floodplain.
We will address the following topics related to regulating development in the floodplain, the goals of floodplain regulation, and what is considered development under the National Flood Insurance Program. These key terms and acronyms will be used during this presentation. You can find these terms and their definitions in the definition section of your participant materials. The primary goal of the NFIP is to reduce losses and damages that occur due to flooding. The primary method for accomplishing this goal is the establishment of minimum elevation and construction standards for all new and substantially improved existing buildings located in the special flood hazard area. The intent of the NFIP's minimum standards is not to prohibit development, but rather to ensure that development will be constructed in such a way as to be protected from the base flood and to not increase flood hazards. A community participating in the NFIP must require a permit prior to construction of any development in the special flood hazard areas identified on a FEMA flood insurance rate map. The NFIP's definition of development encompasses more than the construction of buildings. The NFIP defines development as any man-made change to improved or unimproved real estate. This definition is quite broad and includes not only activities such as the construction of buildings, bridges, roads, levees, and water treatment facilities, but also most modifications to the land itself. Common activities that fall under the definition of development include the construction of new structures, modifications to existing structures, fencing, paving, land clearing, filling, grading, and driving of piles, permanent storage of materials and/or equipment, and any excavation, drilling, mining, or dredging. Responsibility for regulating development in the floodplain is shared among federal, state, and local governments. More information on this shared responsibility is included in videos 14 and 15 in this series. Today, you've learned the goals of floodplain regulation and what is considered development under the National Flood Insurance Program.
If we wanted, I could spend a day-long training session on floodplain management, going into detail on the National Flood Insurance Program minimum standards, which means you elevate to the base flood, or what a lot of people call the 100-year flood. Nationwide, that is across the board the minimum. The state of Iowa, by legislation, requires that all jurisdictions, all communities in Iowa at least elevate 1 foot above that base flood. I mean, it's a standard-wide state requirement. Troy County goes above and beyond that, and we do 18 inches is our requirement. But elevate, that difference between the base flood elevation and the where the bottom of the structure is, you hear called freeboard. And the terminology goes on and on and on. I'm part of IFSMA, the Iowa Floodplain Stormwater Management Association. We just completed work with the DNR on a floodplain desk reference. The presentation that we put together for that, for those starting floodplain management, is almost 300 slides long. I think it's 277 slides. It's a very detailed, complicated matter that a lot of people, including myself, go into without good training. And so that's why we're starting to have these series be developed, by IFSMA stepping up and doing our own webinars and training series. So with that, that's a very general overview on floodplain management. What I want to do, though, is have some playtime with the flood model. Because if you guys want to come on down. So thank you for bearing with me and allowing me to demonstrate the new Ward Stream 3D Stream Table.
Thank you for bringing it.
You're welcome.
Probably when I first walked in the room, I thought maybe the natties, so I was like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a gift.
Okay, where are we? Up to new business, number 9, anything? 10, other business, none that we know of. 11, follow-up on items recommended to the Board of Supervisors and Board of Adjustment.
You guys met since Granddaddy's Roadhouse was taken up by the Board of Adjustment?
No.
That was denied. That conditional use permit for Granddaddy's was denied. That 30-day appeal period has expired. So at this point, that use cannot go forward without applying for another conditional use permit and having that approved or rezoning or whatever. She still has a live application for a child care center, and the church will be discussed at the July 2nd Board of Adjustment meeting. I think so.
12 long-range planning update.
Before you move on, I'm sorry. Are there any other old applications that are active that we need to address with adding in a deadline, kind of like the one that came up tonight? Out there that we want to?
There might be one, but we'll bring that back in July. We're still trying to determine if that can just go right to the Board of Supervisors, and I think that's what there are two that I think we're going to just go right to the Board of Supervisors. That the Commission's already done a recommendation, and we'll go forward. But there might be. That's much appreciated.
Well, I do wonder how we could better. I didn't feel like we served the public very well tonight, and maybe I should have called and had a conversation with you before the meeting, because I just assumed that since it was on the agenda that we would hear the new information, and then I didn't realize it was going to get so confusing, and I apologize for that. I think I should have had a better handle on that.
No, and that, I know at least two of the members of the public here had called in and knew there was no additional information submitted and just wanted to attend and see what happened. So.
Did the right thing.
Motion to adjourn?
Not a gosh darn thing.
Huh? Oh, staff comments.
Tonight is my last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting with you all.
I am
no longer going to be the Planning and Development Director for Story County as of July 1st. I will be the County Outreach and Special Projects Manager for Story County. I am transferring within Story County to a newly created position.
What is
I don't know.
outreach and development.
I will be this new Board of Supervisors. New, they've been here about 3.5 years. Has really sought to increase the means in which they communicate with the public on what's happening in Story County. And beyond that, if you look at the walls, they have a strategic plan that they've adopted. They've developed a capital improvements program and a plan that goes along with that. They've embarked on urban renewal application funding, different programs, and what we've found over the past few years, those have found their way into the planning development realm because they just flow down to the basement. The board has found that they would like planning and development just to be back true to planning and development, serving you all to the best of the ability, as well as the Board of Adjustment, reviewing the permits going forward. The new position will be in charge of communications for Story County. And then any special projects that do come up, like the capital improvements program and the TIF process. And I will be taking floodplain management with me. So, and eventually, hopefully, it goes back to planning and development, but it will be with me for the time being. So.
Like as chair, I'm going to deny that request.
Stand where you're at. Which is really when you said what I recommended. I'm not going to be here in July, and so I was really wanting you just to go forward, so these guys won't have to deal with it. But I sent some sentiment that I wanted to give Mr. Natty a little bit more time to make sure the ducks are in a row and have an opportunity to present the information to you, which I think is fair to him as well. So, yes. It's not yet determined. They will fill the position. And so July 1st. I honestly don't know the time frame for filling that position. This all occurred Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors meeting. So, thank you. Thank you. It is a new challenge. Feel free to visit me anytime. My office will be down the hall and back at Kristen. Straight down that hall. Sometime in July, it will be done. They'll start it here shortly. So. Yeah. Oh, thank you. I also realized I go back in probation. I haven't had a job change for 14 years, and I haven't been on probation for 14 years. So.
That's funny.
It will be a talent, and it's an opportunity for me to continue to use my talents to further Story County. And I believe in the direction this board is going, and this is a way to continue to provide the best outreach and services we can. Now you may adjourn.
I think you're more into adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, no, let's just sit here. Thank you.